Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. American citizens have been wonderfully blessed for a long, long time. We have had a constitution which has provided freedom, stability, opportunity, and inspiration. Although we have been devastated by one thoroughly inexcusable war, we have remained relatively peaceful and successful. Our economic situation, like other economies in the world, has been to some extent like a roller coaster. Yet we have enjoyed prosperity beyond any other nation on earth. Our racial tension has been somewhat relieved, but there is a long way to go. I see many problems in our nation, as I am sure you do. But I am still grateful to be an American. I would not trade my citizenship in the United States for that of any other country in the world. Unfortunately, many of our blessings, liberties, and opportunities are in danger of being lost altogether or of being curtailed considerably. Our leadership on the local level, at our state capitals, and in Washington has often betrayed the best interests of the American people. Even though communism and socialism have shown themselves to be diabolical and destructive, many prominent leaders in this nation still lean towards some form of collectivism. If we socialize medicine, which the Clinton administration is trying to do in Washington, and the McWhorter administration has already done in Tennessee, we have taken a giant step toward destroying the best health care delivery system in the world, although flawed in some respects, and establishing socialism in the United States. How can our leaders examine the fall of Russia and the other communist countries and make the same blunders which devastated these countries? As much as I oppose many of the morally insensitive decisions which our politicians are constantly making in Nashville and in Washington, I am brought back to the realization that government as an institution, not any particular government, is ordained of God. Paul commanded the Christians who lived in the Roman Empire, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resists the power, resists the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Will you then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and you shall receive praise of the same." Romans 13, 1 through 3. The passages which require Christians to honor and to obey their governments do not mean that God approves of every action of every government. In recent months, millions of Americans have been made aware of our government's involvement in human experimentation. We have often treated human beings as guinea pigs. For example, at Tuskegee, Alabama, many blacks were deliberately infected with syphilis. We have no way of ascertaining how many of our own black citizens suffered excruciatingly and then died from syphilis. In the 1940s and 1950s, radioactive materials were given to pregnant mothers without obtaining the permission of those mothers. Informed consent was not obtained in either of the cases I have mentioned. Since World War II, we Americans have condemned German experiments on their own people and on captured American soldiers. I personally have spoken out on the atrocities of the Nazis. But our hands are also full of the blood of innocent people. And I am not just talking about our having killed 30 million babies by abortion. Do you think God approved of Hitler's actions, even though they were done by a government? Does he approve of our having experimented on human beings and having killed so many babies by abortion? What did he think of the treatment of his own people by the oppressive government of the Pharaohs? Did the Egyptian government have the right to enslave the Jews just because it was the legally constituted government of Egypt. After the communists seized power in Russia, they may have killed as many as 100 million people. In addition, they robbed millions more of any hope and dreams and aspirations. Does God endorse or overlook the godless cruelties of the Communist Party in Russia, in Romania, in Albania, in Cuba, and in China? That God ordained civil government cannot be doubted by any careful Bible student. But He did not and does not want any government mistreating its citizens. All of this says that there are times when God's people cannot abide by the regulations of some governments, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There are times when we have to say to the government, "You can do with me whatever you want, but we are not going to bow down." Daniel 3:16-18. The midwives in Egypt deliberately defied the king's orders to kill the Hebrew babies. Exodus 1:15-22. How can we be followers of Jesus Christ and do wrong, even if the government demands it? But what if there were no governments, local, state, or national? Can you imagine a world where there are no laws, no armies, no police? Governments can be, and often are, too restrictive. Laws can be too oppressive. Armies can be cruel and heartless. Police can be brutal. But a nation without government, without discipline, is destined to self-destruct. Anarchy, a condition where there is no rule, is the worst possible situation in any country. The communists have often used anarchists to overthrow a government and to allow the communists to take over. But as soon as the communists are in control, they eliminate the anarchists. The communists know how impossible it would be to operate the government with anarchists running loose. Let me give you a brief review of some events in our country which show how corrupt many government officials are. There are very few weeks when we do not hear of some government leaders misbehaving. Jim Wright from the state of Texas, a longtime speaker of the United States House of Representatives, was forced to resign his position because of shady dealings. Richard Nixon was also forced out of office because of his involvement in the Watergate scandal. His acts not only were wrong, they were just plain stupid. He almost certainly would have been elected without the deceit of his staff. But he and his men acted inexcusably foolishly in attempting to break into the Washington offices of the National Democratic Party. Senator Bob Packwood is currently fighting to maintain his seat, but he almost certainly will fail. He might even be charged with criminal conduct, although the likelihood is probably not too great. You may be thinking, it could happen in Washington State, in Texas, or in Massachusetts, but not in Tennessee. How long, dear friend, is your memory? Tennessee, like all other states in the Union, has had its share of crooked politicians. One governor from West Tennessee was jailed for misconduct while in office. Of course, he claimed he was innocent, but so have Jim Wright, Bob Packwood, and Richard Nixon. At one time, 18 sheriffs in Tennessee were either in jail or under indictment. Kentucky, Alabama, Mississippi, and Arkansas have not fared any better. Every city, every county, and every state in the nation has had to deal with irresponsible and crooked politicians. But we also have to deal with crooked lawyers, crooked businessmen, crooked teachers, and even crooked preachers. No profession has a monopoly on being dishonest and obnoxious. Probably the president who got by with more corruption and more just plain old immorality than any other was John Fitzgerald Kennedy. I do not say this because he was a Roman Catholic or because he was a Democrat. In the first place, it is almost certain that Joe Kennedy, the president's father, paid millions and millions of dollars to get his son elected. Frank Sinatra distributed $50,000 to local sheriffs in West Virginia to encourage those sheriffs to use their influence to get John Kennedy elected. John Kennedy was notoriously sexually immoral, both before he married and after. His and Robert's sexual involvement with Marilyn Monroe is too well known to require any further amplification. Gary Hart and Bill Clinton are amateurs compared to the Kennedys, and yet John Kennedy is exalted as if he were some kind of god. It is unfortunate, but many of our laws are designed to protect the criminal element, not law-abiding citizens. We are so afraid to trample on the rights of the drug addicts, dope peddlers, murderers, thieves, and rapists that we overlook the victims of crime. Violent criminals must be imprisoned and kept locked up for a long time. Aaron Yellow Eyes has just been given 25 years for killing his own child. He probably will be back on the streets in 5 or 6 years. USA Today, Tuesday, January the 25th, 1994, reported that murderers are typically sentenced to 15 years in prison, but actually serve only 5.5 years. The typical rapist is sentenced to 8 years, but serves only 3. Page 8A. Juvenile criminals are becoming the major crime problem in our country, especially in the inner cities, such as Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York. When young offenders are apprehended by the law, they often taunt the police to their faces. They tell policemen, "There is nothing you can do with me. I am under 18 and will be out of jail before the sun goes down." That has to be changed, and changed immediately. When a 14-year-old commits a heinous crime, he ought to be tried as an adult, since he has committed an adult crime. We must stop them before they commit other vicious crimes. The 2 12-year-olds who kidnapped and killed a little boy in England need to be kept in prison for the rest of their natural lives. At least, it would prevent their committing other heinous deeds. White-collar criminals, such as congressmen, senators, prominent businessmen, and sheriffs, are often sent to Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama, or to Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas, Nevada. In these minimum security prisons, the inmates often live like celebrities. These prisoners have it much too easy, although being anywhere in prison is not a piece of cake. They ought to be forced to work rather than being on a government-paid vacation. Violent criminals must be locked up in order to protect the public. Nonviolent criminals must be made to pay the victims for the wrongs they have committed. Incidentally, Chuck Colson, one of Richard Nixon's henchmen in the Watergate scandal, has written extensively and perceptively on this topic. How easy it is for modern men to think that our generation alone has faced such extensive problems relating to political and religious leaders. But we may have forgotten about the kings in Babylon, in Egypt, in Medo-Persia, in Greece, and in Rome. We may have also forgotten about Jeroboam the first and second, Amri, Zedekiah, and a host of other wicked kings in Israel and in Judah. Let me give you just 2 examples. When King Amri died, his son Ahab reigned in his stead. 1 Kings 16:29. Amri wrought evil in the eyes of the Lord, and did evil worse than all that were before him. 1 Kings 16:25. As bad as Amri was, Ahab was immeasurably worse. And Ahab, the son of Amri, did evil in the sight of the Lord above all that were before him. 1 Kings 16:30. The Israelite kings seemed to be as bad as they could get, but they got worse all the time. The following comment is particularly telling. "And it came to pass, as if it had been a light thing for Ahab to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Zidonians, and went and served Baal and worshiped him. 1 Kings 16:31. Ahab actually built an altar to Baal in the house of Baal in Samaria. 1 Kings 16:32. And yet this moral degenerate had the audacity to accuse Elijah, the great prophet of God, of troubling Israel. 1 Kings 18:17. Elijah condemned Ahab for having sold himself to work evil in the sight of the Lord. 1 Kings 21:20. Manasseh began his reign at the age of 12 and reigned for 55 years. 2 Kings 21:1. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, after the abominations of the heathen, whom the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. 2 Kings 21:2. Manasseh built altars for Baal, worshipped and served the host of heaven, and made his own son pass through the fire. He also observed times, used enchantments, and dealt with familiar spirits and wizards. He wrought much wickedness in the sight of the Lord to provoke the Lord to anger. 2 Kings 21, 3-6. Moreover, Manasseh shed innocent blood very much, till he had filled Jerusalem from one end to the other. Beside his sin, where he made Judah to sin, in doing that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. 2 Kings 21:16. Ahab and Manasseh were supposed to be God's anointed. What abominable creatures. But because men are kings or governors or presidents, they have divine rights, do they not? Many kings have thought, and some have actually said, I may not always be right, but I am always the king. Did David, the man after God's own heart, have the right to commit adultery with Bathsheba and virtually have her husband murdered? Were his actions excused because he was king of Israel, God's anointed? David confessed to the courageous prophet Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. 2 Kings 12:13. Even though David was king, he had no right to do wrong. When Ahab and Jezebel robbed Naboth of his vineyard, was that all right since Ahab was king? Does a president or a governor or a senator have the right to lie, to steal, to commit adultery, just because they are in positions of power? Thomas E. Reeves' excellent book, A Question of Character, A Life of John F. Kennedy, gives these disturbing incidents from the life of President Kennedy. He was exceedingly vain, incredibly foul-mouthed, petty, penurious, insensitive, spiteful, eager for salacious gossip, and extremely manipulative. He slipped secret government documents to journalists in return for favors. He got drunk. He favored abortion and denigrated liberals. Page 6. A leak from a staff member led to the revelation that a beautiful young California woman, Judith Campbell Exner, had been secretly admitted to the White House on many occasions for more than a year to carry on a romance with the president. Exner was close to mafia figures Sam Giancana and John Roselli. Page 7. Time and Newsweek linked the president romantically with several well-known actresses and scores of young women, including two youthful staff members codenamed Fiddle and Faddle by the Secret Service. One former New Frontiersman was quoted as saying of the Kennedy White House, it was a revolving door over there. A woman had to fight to get in that line. Page 7. Thomas E. Reeves quotes Aristotle as saying that a prince or a royal family should be chosen because of the preeminence of their personal virtue. The best state, he declared, is the one that is morally best. Erasmus insisted that no one can be a good prince unless he is also a good man. Pages 12 and 13. What do the scriptures say about kings and other rulers? What does God expect them to be morally and spiritually? Let me give you some examples. Where there is no guidance or leadership, a people falls. But in an abundance of counselors there is safety. Proverbs 11:14. It is an abomination for kings to do evil. For the throne is established by righteousness. Righteous lips are the delight of a king, and he loves him who speaks what is right. Proverbs 16:12 and 13. Loyalty and faithfulness preserve the king, and his throne is upheld by righteousness. Proverbs 20:28. Please take special notice of these words from Proverbs. Take away the wicked from the presence of the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. Proverbs 25:5. This last verse from Proverbs tells us that a leader, whether king or president or prime minister, should have honorable men and women as his counselors. Take the wicked away from the presence of the king. President Clinton has appointed some really wicked people in his cabinet and to other offices. Dr. Jocelyn Elders, United States Surgeon General, approves of humanistic sex education, school-based clinics in our schools, the legalization of drugs, and the killing of babies through abortion. Janet Reno, the American Attorney General, was involved in a bizarre legal case in the state of Florida, which you can read about in the January 1994 issue of the Reader's Digest. She also supports contamination of the military by having homosexuals in the service. Obviously, she endorses abortion, or she would not have been selected for that post. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the newest member of the United States Supreme Court, believes in killing babies for no other reason than that the mother wants them dead. Take away the wicked from the presence of the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. Proverbs 25:5. As I read this final verse from Proverbs, please think seriously of the current moral and political climate in this country. By justice, a king gives stability to the land, but one who exacts gifts ruins it. If a king judges the poor with equity, his throne will be established forever. Proverbs 29:4 and 14. In view of these powerful passages from Proverbs, what do you see as the future of the United States of America? Can we continue to condone and to promote gross immorality and survive as a nation? It is time that each of us raises his voice and uses his vote to make a difference in our world. There have been some good kings, presidents, and prime ministers down through the ages. Josiah is an example of a good king, one devoted to doing right, whatever the cost. Josiah began his reign at the age of 8 and reigned for 31 years, 2 Kings 22:2. Hilkiah, the high priest, discovered the book of the law in the house of the Lord, 2 Kings 22:8. He brought the book of the law to the young king, who wanted to find the meaning of the law. He commanded the high priest and other advisors, "Go, inquire of the Lord for me and for the people, and for Judah, concerning the words of this book that has been found. For great is the wrath of the Lord that is kindled against us, because our fathers have not obeyed the words of this book, to do according to all that is written concerning us." 2 Kings 23:13. By the time Josiah became king, the nation had become unspeakably corrupt. Idolatry and immorality of all sorts were rampant in the land. Josiah instituted a series of reforms intended to restore Israel to its place in the heart of Almighty God. He got rid of all the vessels made for Baal, the fertility god, and for the Asherah, and for all the host of heaven. He burned the idols and the paraphernalia associated with them outside Jerusalem. He deposed all the idolatrous priests. He broke down the houses of the male cult prostitutes. 2 Kings 23:4, 5, and 7. But getting rid of the evil in Israel was not enough. Josiah commanded the people, "Keep the Passover to the Lord your God, as it is written in this covenant of the book." For no Passover had been kept since the days of the judges who judged Israel, or during the days of the kings of Israel or the kings of Judah. 2 Kings 23, 21 and 22. Some of the kings of Judah and of Israel had introduced all kinds of heathen practices, such as astrology, mediumship, and witchcraft. Josiah put away the mediums and the wizards and the teraphim and the idols and all the abominations that were seen in the land of Judah and Jerusalem. Before him there was no king like him who turned to the Lord with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses. Nor did any like him arise after him. 2 Kings 23:25. What a wonderful testimony to this righteous young king. Unfortunately, after Josiah died, his reformation was cut short. 2 Kings 23:26 and 27. Josiah's reforms could not overcome the entrenched evil which characterized the kings which were before him. Have we, as a nation, gone so far into degradation, corruption, and rebellion that our situation cannot be reversed? Only God in heaven knows. But we must work to make a difference. The principles which govern individuals must also govern nations: righteousness, justice, honesty, morality. God expects each of us Christians to be salt and light. We might be the leaven which saves the United States of America. My friends, we thank you for listening today. May our Heavenly Father continue to bless you.